Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, 100 days here in the United States and 146 mass shootings. The mass shooting that took place in Louisville on Monday became the 146th mass shooting in 100 days in this country, and nothing is being done. That is definitely something we are going to cover on today's program, as well as, of course, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas and his unreported gifts totaling into the millions from Republican megadonor Harlan Crow. We've also got some really unfortunate poll numbers from Donald Trump's camp to discuss, and we've got a Q&A this week, lots of wonderful questions to get to, and if you want to get in on future Q&As, subscribe to the Ring of Fire YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheRingOfFire, and if you want to get the full episode of Ring of Fire every week, sign up and become a member at rofpodcast.com. All right, let's jump right in to this week's Q&A. We got a ton of questions over the Easter weekend, and I want to just start getting into them because there's so much to discuss. So many things obviously have happened in the last week, so let's jump right in. First one is from YouTube user PJ Razvoza. My apologies if I pronounce any names incorrectly. So the question is, of course, first, let me thank you for all the fine work you do in keeping us all informed about what's going on. My question is, if we're able to hold Trump accountable with his first indictment and hopefully three more that may follow, will we also be able to hold accountable all those Republicans who are currently holding office accountable for assistance or possible assistance with January 6th, in your opinion? Could we? Yes. Will we? No. I mean, as much as we would like to think that the DOJ is looking at all of these individuals, I think really they're focused only on the people from Trump's administration and his campaign. And based on what I see, it doesn't appear that they're actually going after any of these lawmakers, which of course is a shame. And it's an absolute travesty to justice that they're not going after these people. We have Andy Biggs from the House of Representatives. You know, Matt Gaetz, to an extent, according to reports, could have been involved in the attempts to overturn it. Marjorie Taylor Greene, who, of course, like Matt Gaetz, asked for a preemptive pardon. Ron Johnson, Republican senator out of Wisconsin. The list goes on and on. And not to mention the state level representatives, you know, a lot of them from Arizona, who were also involved in these schemes to send fake electors, all of this. And as far as we know, unless Jack Smith is just playing it that close to the chest here, none of those people are actually being actively investigated as potential criminal targets. And again, that's a bit of a miscarriage of justice here. Now, I understand the magnitude of such an investigation, and I think that's something that we also have to keep in mind. You know, the DOJ is already in uncharted waters here. Going after the former president of the United States is already unprecedented. Then his attempts to overturn the actual election, that action is unprecedented. So, you know, this is something the DOJ is not used to. And then if you were to try to rope in all of these other Republican lawmakers, I think we would quickly see the agency get in over their heads. We would see the accusations of political bias and weaponization, you know, reach all-time highs, which is already a major hurdle that they have to overcome. So it's difficult for them to be able to do that, and I understand it. And again, I'm not a fan of it, but I also totally understand why they may not be able to go those routes. Now, that's not to say that it may not happen in the future. If what they do is successful with Donald Trump, I would think at that point, a lot of those Republican lawmakers might start wetting themselves because if we can get Donald Trump for this, if we can successfully indict, prosecute, and convict him for this, then at that point, nothing's off the table, right? We could totally do that. But we kind of got to feel out this Trump thing first, and we'll see how that goes. Here's a question from a user named Satan Hell, who asks, I am a Canadian, and I've been watching this stuff ever since Trump announced that he was going to run for president in 2016, and I've been addicted to the soap opera. I can't wait to see what happens every time I wake up, but sadly, it is creeping its way here in Canada as well, like the stupid truckers and stuff. I just can't believe how people are so easy to drink the Kool-Aid here. I totally agree with you, these things, and I support you guys to the fullest. I think that we should make North America great, and mad respect to you guys for all your hard work. Well, thank you very much for the kind words. But see, that's the problem with fascism, you know, and you go back to the history of World War II, it wasn't just Germany. You know, once Germany starts going down that path, then you start to see it in Italy, you start to see other countries kind of make the push for it. And in some countries, obviously, there was pushback. They didn't go for it. Others were a little more open to it. And it does scare me that that might be what we see here in North America, especially with this renewed push by the Republican Party, you know, basically just in the last few days, where you have more and more of these Republicans in Congress here coming out saying, you know what, maybe we ought to follow Donald Trump's plan and start bombing the cartels in Mexico. Maybe we ought to open fire on a sovereign nation that shares a border with us here in the United States. Maybe that's a good idea. Like, that's what we're seeing Republicans say. And if the Mexican government goes along with it, which, thank God right now there's no indication that they would, but if they did, then suddenly we're doing this unprecedented thing where we join forces with a sovereign nation to start bombing their country. Because that's what Republicans are saying. Let's go bomb the cartels. We'll label them as terrorists so that we do not have to get congressional approval. You know, the same guidelines that were passed by Congress following the 9/11 attacks. If we label somebody a terrorist, thanks to the AUMF, we don't have to get congressional approval. The president can act unilaterally. It's a disturbing and disgusting trend. But that is also part of the fascist creep that is coming through the United States right now. And it is terrifying. I'm sure it has to be terrifying there in Canada. And honestly, I can't help but feel like part of this comes from social media, because the crazies, as I guess we can call them, have a big megaphone, and their megaphones get louder and louder. These used to be people that had nobody that would listen to their stupid ideas, but now everybody kind of has to listen to their stupid ideas. That's how we end up, you know, with that trucker thing that the YouTube user here referenced. They didn't even know what they were protesting. They're like, we're protesting the mandates on masks. Yeah, but you actually started doing that after the mask mandates were already gone. Like, what are you even talking about? And then it was amplified after it came from the crazies on social media. It gets amplified by Republican media, which dominates the airwaves here in the United States, both online and on cable. And it grows and grows and grows from just a couple of nut jobs to a massive idea. Which it wasn't even an idea, but that's how it happens. And that's how this fascism spreads, and it goes beyond our borders. And Republicans are trying to push it even further beyond our borders right now. Here's a question from Donovan Finley, who says, hi, Farron. I'm in my senior year of high school, and I started following politics during the 2020 election. I wanted to know what got you into politics and what led you to where you are now. That is a brilliant question, and I'm glad to see young people getting involved in politics. And honestly, my path is kind of similar. I was a senior in high school during the 2000 election, Bush v. Gore, and of course, being in a high school here in Florida, you know, the whole spotlight of the nation's on us here, and that really got me involved. Now, I had always, according to my mother, been political. You know, I came home one day. She tells a story. It was kindergarten or first grade, talking about the horrible immigration policies of George W. Bush at the time. So I guess I've always been political. I've always been involved. I've always wanted to go this route. And it really just comes from that passion and finding a way to do it. Now, back when I first got involved, you know, super lucky that down here in our little red spot in Florida, there was this little blue dot called Ring of Fire. It had existed for several months, and I got a job here. Scott Milliken, who was running the thing, gave me a call. We had known each other for a long time, and he said, "Hey, the guy we've got doing our research has to go away to school. You know, you're waiting tables. I know you don't want to do that. Would you be interested in interviewing for this job?" So I said yes, and the rest is history. That was August of 2004, and I've been here ever since. But today, honestly, it's a lot easier to get involved. There are organizations out there, depending on which route you want to go. If you want to run for something, there's an aptly named group called Run for Something. You know, they're a great group. There's so many grassroots organizations that would take on volunteers, that would take on paid staffers. You know, we have statewide networks of these things now, and those are definitely something to look into if you want to go that route. If you want to go the media route, get a camera and a microphone and launch a YouTube channel, and that's also a great path as well. You know, these are paths, like I said, that didn't exist when I got into this. So it's easier now than it was back then. And if you have something important to say, the audience will find it. The audience will come to you. I mean, that is one thing we have learned. And it truly is remarkable, the growth that we have seen, the growth that we continue to see. So if you want to get involved, get involved. You know, look for organizations in your state that may be something you want to go. Again, if you want to go that route, you want to do the media thing. You know, pretty much every computer you buy now comes with a webcam. So that's not that hard. It may not look the prettiest, but again, if you've got something to say, people will come to you. And if you grow, you can, you know, build out a studio one day. So if you want to get involved, get involved. I love to see the younger generation coming up. It's awesome. So thank you, Donovan, for your question. I wish you the best of luck. You need anything, reach out to us. Happy to give you advice at any point. Question here from LordWolf91. Says, "Hello, Farron. So many questions in your opinion." Oh, so my question. Sorry, I don't know how I misread that. "So my question is, in your opinion, what is the best way to get non-voters out to vote? We literally just saw it happen here in Wisconsin, where we had record turnout in this election this past week. So what's the best way to get the my vote doesn't matter people out to vote?" That is such a tough question. It really, really is a tough question. But I do think the best thing that we can do is educate people. We need to let them know not just that their vote matters. I mean, if you want to do that, pull up numbers, you know, like Lauren Boebert's election this past November, she won by like 500 some odd votes. Show them, like, if you had 600 people in that county that were going to vote Democrat but figured out what's the point, suddenly Lauren Boebert's not a member of Congress anymore. So that's a good example of why every vote matters. The 2000 election, Bush v. Gore, that shows why every vote matters. But other than that, explain to them what's on the line. And it's difficult to do to a mass audience. A lot of these non-voters do need to be addressed one-on-one, which can be a daunting task. But if you can go out there and explain to these folks, listen, it only takes a couple minutes of your time. If you don't want to sit in long lines on voting day because you live in an area where Republicans have, you know, restricted the voting times, they've restricted the number of polling places that are open, I understand that. That is daunting. People will stand out there for hours, and you may not have time to do it. So file an application for an absentee ballot. Do something. Do anything. I mean, if you are in a state that allows no cause absentee vote by mail, do it. Like, tell those people, like, just do it. They'll send it to your house. And then you just, at your leisure, fill it out, sign it, send it back, and you're done. Those are the things we have to tell these people while also telling them that your rights may not be on the line. Maybe you're a member of a group that is not currently under attack by these Republicans. That doesn't mean that you're always going to be not under attack. Once they're done attacking all those other people, as the old saying goes, there's going to be nobody left to stand up for you. We have already seen the escalations. We have seen how Republicans jump from just, oh, well, no, we can't have transgender athletes because it's not fair, to suddenly drag shows are indoctrinating children and we're going to make them illegal. Like, that is that escalation. And we see it all the time. And if we can get these people out to vote, if we can explain to them how other people are losing their rights, and it's worth your time to go out and vote and let your voice be heard so these people know that you're doing the bare minimum to help them and to help yourself. That's the point that we have to get across to them. Here's a question from Tyler Hackner, who is a very prominent person, by the way, in leftist media. He's always commenting on the shows. I've seen him in live chats on other shows. I follow him on Twitter. He's a great guy. Tyler, thank you for your question. And here it is. What advice do you give young people just getting into politics? So it's very similar to the question from Donovan Finley. And I will say, for people just getting into politics, is make sure you are choosing your outlets properly. Not everybody on the left is actually on the left. There are plenty of grifters out there as well. You know, we have them on our side. There's pretty much everybody on the right is nothing but a grifter, but there's a couple wolves in sheep's clothing over here on the left as well. So those are the ones to be careful of. And most importantly, I would say, don't put any of these people up on a pedestal. Don't put me up on a pedestal. There's literally nothing special about any of us. And I hate to, you know, denigrate the group as a whole. I love them all. But at the same time, we all started off as people just like y'all. You know, just sometimes angry, sometimes active. Some came from backgrounds in activism. Some came from backgrounds in marketing. Just suddenly decided, you know what? I have a lot of really good opinions and insight into politics. I'm going to do that. So it doesn't matter what your specialty is. It doesn't matter where you come from or who you are. You can get into this if this is what you're passionate about and if it's what you're good at. But don't ever put yourself above anybody else. Don't ever think that you are above criticism. And don't take criticism as a personal attack. You know, we see that a lot on social media. I see it a lot with people on the left. Hell, I woke up this morning, got on Twitter, and suddenly I see, like, all the left is, like, at each other's throats over something that one of the hosts said, like, 3 weeks ago, and they're still complaining about it. Meanwhile, Republicans are stripping us of our rights. We've got mass shootings out there, and the left is over here eating our own because people put these people up on pedestals, and some of the hosts can't take constructive criticism very well, or some people misinterpret what the host even said. I don't know, but it happens all the time. And that's what makes me mad. And so that's what I hope with the young generation, that you look at the folks who do this and you're like, these people are really good at this. Sometimes they get it wrong. Sometimes I get it wrong. Don't be afraid to call us out. And our reaction to being called out when we get it wrong, that tells you if that person is worthwhile, worth your audience, worth your attention, and whatever. And I know that's kind of a weird answer to that question, but I do feel like that is something that's been going around a lot. So if you want to get into politics, I encourage you to do it. But I also encourage you to be very selective about who you choose to follow and make sure that you're not idolizing these people, and that you're using them as tools to educate yourself. Now, I know it's kind of weird to say, like, we're all just tools, but we are. Like, that's what we do. We give you the tools to be educated and to hopefully spread the message. You know, I don't want my message to end on your ears. I want everybody else to go out and mention these same things too and start talking about them as well. Create the conversation around these issues. That's what I hope people take away from me. It's not about me. I don't care if nobody knows who I am. I want the ideas that I put out there to gain traction. I want these ideas to be real. And I want people to be able to talk about them and expand them. That is what we need to do. And that is what anybody getting into politics, that should be your goal. If your goal is to be famous, if your goal is to have everybody that you see in the grocery store know who you are and be like, oh my God, that's so-and-so, then you're getting in it for the wrong reasons. But if you're getting into it because you've got good ideas or because you want to amplify good ideas, that's the best thing there is. And that is how you become successful. Here's a question from user Jedi of Ossus, who says, "Hi Farron, I'm a meat cutter in Ohio. I feel like I'm the only liberal in Butler County. It gets stressful dealing with the right here. My question is, how do you deal with it in Florida? Because I've been in fights with these idiots. I'm at the point where I don't want to go anywhere but work and home." You know, I relate to that a lot. Being down here in a very red area of Florida, just like you're in a very red area there in Butler County, it's difficult to go out and even have these conversations about politics because we're not just talking with people with whom we disagree. That's no longer what political conversations are. We're talking to people who, based on the things we've seen, in some instances, they want to kill us. They wish we were dead. And that is what makes this so terrifying. Honestly, when I meet new people and they ask me, like, well, what do you do? I don't mention Ring of Fire. I don't mention YouTube. I tell people I work for a legal magazine, which is true. It's not a lie. I do. But I don't get into this other stuff, especially in this area, because I don't know what these people are going to do. I don't want them looking up my name and finding out, wait a minute, that SOB I just saw in Publix is this liberal. If I ever see him again, like, I don't want that. I don't want that for my kids. I don't want to put any kind of unwanted attention on myself or my family. So I get what you're saying. It is not just about talking politics and fighting with these idiots. It's about just simply existing with our viewpoints in these very red areas that has become so difficult for us to do. And it's not fair for us. It absolutely is not. So sometimes, and I hate to say this, I don't want this to sound cowardice, but sometimes we just have to keep our mouths shut. You know, I have lots of friends who are very on the right, very. And these are good friends, people I have known since like fifth grade. And they know everything about me and I know everything about them, but we disagree on everything involving politics. So you know what we don't do? We don't talk about politics. We talk about everything else and we can have fun. We can be the best of friends ever, even if we disagree on politics. And honestly, that's how it should be. We shouldn't have to have these arguments with the people we know we can't change their minds. And that's the key. The people we know we can't change their minds. Avoid those conversations if you can. But if somebody brings it up as, hey, I'm not so sure, I heard about this, but what do you think? That's when you see the opening. Like, wait a minute, this is a person who isn't sure that what they're hearing is right. This is somebody I can help. I can explain the truth to them. Those are the conversations worth having. Those are the people that you can reach. But if it's somebody, you know, in a MAGA hat, avoid that conversation at all costs. Here's a question from NateDogs11, who kind of actually building on the other one says, what state has your family considered moving to? Is there any, hopefully societal and political, for Florida in the future? Listen, some states we've considered moving to, mostly my wife. If it was up to me and I could afford it, obviously, which I definitely can't, I love New York City. I mean, it's absolutely one of my favorite places in the world. She wants to move to Colorado, which we did a vacation there, a family vacation, not last summer, but the summer before. And it's great. It's beautiful. It truly is a mix, which is weird to see with political values. It's a true swing state, so it's not as red as we are here in Florida. My problem is I can't breathe. I couldn't breathe for the entire week, and it was very rough on me. But Colorado is definitely a place she would love for us to move. Honestly, I'm a big fan of, you know, Arizona, Nevada. I love Las Vegas. I'm not going to lie. It's a fun place with a lot of things to do. But New York City for me, man, like that is just the coolest place I've ever been. I love it. Maybe it's different being a tourist in New York as opposed to a resident. But if I had the option and I could afford it, like if money wasn't a factor, I'd already been in New York 10 years ago. So let me continue here. We have a question here from Sally Zapata 78, who says, "I do not know how you're able to talk about all this stuff day in and day out. How are you able to keep sane? How are you not losing your mind with all this? I admire you. Thank you for all you do. I don't know how you do it." So how do I keep myself sane? See, that's the trick. I'm just totally bonkers nuts. Like, absolutely, in order to do this, yeah, you got to be a little bit crazy to put yourself through this kind of torture every single day. And no, I'm kidding. I'm totally normal and sane, but it gets draining. And I will say that usually every time we do one of these Q&As, a question like this does come up. And this is my chance to be totally, completely, 100% honest with everybody, because it is difficult. It is exceptionally difficult. I do 8 videos every single morning before 8 a.m. for Ring of Fire, 5 days a week, every week, no matter what, like every day. And then we got to start the real work. I'm gonna start looking for stuff for tomorrow. Got to start writing stuff up. Got to do, you know, stuff with the magazine that I do. I got to produce America's Lawyer with Pap. So there's lots of other things as well. But what helps keep me going with this is seeing the impact that it has. You know, if we were doing this every day and looking at our YouTube numbers and we were getting a couple hundred views, hell, even just only a couple thousand views, it would be draining. But when we do this and we see that our content is out there and it's getting shared and people like it and they're discussing it, like that's when we know, okay, this works. This matters. People like this and they depend on us. And that's the reason I'm able to keep going and continue to do this. So, you know, it's not about, oh, good, we're going viral. I don't care about that. What I care about is people caring about these issues that we put forward, that I put forward every day on the YouTube channel, that keeps me going. Also, you know, my family, that's easy. My dogs, cats, all of that. I mean, just every little thing that's not politics, that's not work. Those are the things that keep me going. Those are the reasons I keep doing this. You know, I've gotten into taking more vacations, and I spent my first 13 years at Ring of Fire never once going on a vacation, ever, ever. Like, I'm not exaggerating, never went on vacation. Then once I finally did it the first time, it suddenly was like, okay, wow, I came back refreshed and recharged. I have to do this more. And I do it more now. So that keeps me going. The family, the great people at the office, like at the studio, it's just amazing. Like, we have fun and we can, you know, complain to each other about everything and then laugh. And it's a really great environment that we have at the office, which makes it fun to go in. I'm not one of those people that wakes up and it's like, oh my God, I got to go to work. It's like, all right, let's go to work. Let's do it. So having the good environment, having the good family environment, having a good, you know, social network of friends and family, it's all of it put together is how I stay sane. because some of these things we have to talk about are truly disgusting. They're truly disturbing. They are depressing. Some of it hits very close to home. And in order to get through it, you got to have good people around you. You've got to have outlets, you know, for your anger, for your sadness. And I do have that. So that is what keeps me going here. Here's a question from user Ghostface, who asks, "Hey, Farron, I have a trolling question, but one I simply can't resist." Oh, I love these. "What would you think about a Herschel Walker and a Marjorie Taylor Greene presidential ticket? Not one to really ask such question, but I'm sort of curious about what your reaction is to the thought of it." Oh, hell yeah. Like, if I could put money behind a Herschel Walker / Marjorie Taylor Greene ticket, I would do it. That would be the most fun thing I have ever seen in my entire life, because they'd have no chance at winning. I mean, Herschel Walker couldn't even pull out a victory in conservative Georgia. You know, Marjorie Taylor Greene has the benefit of being in a safe Republican district where she can't lose no matter what. So you take them out of there, you put them out there in the real world where they have to address real people, and they're just going to flop so damn hard. And I say that because we're already seeing that with Ron DeSantis. DeSantis wins re-election here in Florida back in November by 1.5 million votes, the biggest margin of any statewide election we have seen in this state in decades. Man thought he had a mandate, so he starts prepping this presidential run, goes out there in the real world, and his ratings tank because he sucks. Same thing would happen with Marjorie Taylor Greene and Herschel Walker. So I would love to see that happen. I would love to see that ticket. So that is definitely something that I totally, totally want to see happen. Thank you for that question. That's very funny and very clever. I got to hand it to you. Here's a question from a user whose name is simply Justin, who says, "It looks as though Gen Z is going to be the best chance to help bring about more progressive change in the United States. While they do seem to lean more Democratic and far left, for that matter, how can we reach out to Gen Z more to fast track a more progressive agenda? How do we get them to the polls without 'let's Pokemon go to the polls' cringe from politicians?" I think we're seeing it right now. We're already seeing this generation, which, as you pointed out, it's not even like they lean to the left. This is a hugely progressive generation. And in order to get them to actually vote, we have to put issues that they care about on the ballot, either via politician or literally via referendum. We've got to make sure that they have something to vote for, not just something to vote against. And right now, Republicans aren't doing themselves any favors. We've got a Republican Party. Hell, we've got a Republican presidential candidate, Nikki Haley, that has already said for this young generation, Generation Z and millennials, which I'm in, we're going to raise your retirement age. So you're just going to keep working forever. And that's not sitting well with that generation who's already struggling to find work as it is. So that's a thing. The abortion bans that Republicans are putting in place, that doesn't sit well with these individuals. So I do think that we're giving these people something to vote for and something to vote against, which is important. But a lot of it is because the Republicans are so bad. So we're giving them more to vote against than something to vote for. But the hope I see is that we can get more young people in office. And that's the key, because it's not just about, oh, yeah, we'll vote for Democrats because we're not going to take your rights away. That's great. But you're also not going to give them something. And you got to. You can't just say my job is to act as goalie to prevent Republicans from scoring horrible victories. You have to say I'm going to go on offense and I'm going to fight for you to get health care. I'm going to fight for you to get debt-free college. I'm going to fight for you by protecting the environment. Those are all issues, by the way, that generation views as exceptionally important. So until and unless Democrats come out and say, we're going to push these things, you're gonna have weaker participation from the age group that needs those things. They will come out to fight for their rights and to prevent Republicans from stripping them away, but we could easily see them become non-voters or occasional voters in the future if the Democrats do not give them something to vote for. So we got them right now, but we got to keep them in the future, and you only do that by giving them something to vote for. Let me find another good question here. Actually, here's one from Tammy. This just actually addresses something I previously answered. It says, Farron, considering the political climate in Florida, would you consider moving to Colorado? We'd love to have you. As I said, my wife absolutely would love to go to Florida, Colorado. So it's not out of the realm of possibility, I guess I'll say. J.W. Coop asks, can the decision to overturn Roe versus Wade be rescinded? Yes, it can. If you can overturn Roe, you can overturn the ruling overturning Roe, if that makes sense. But yes, because apparently legal precedent here in the United States no longer means anything to anyone. I mean, based on legal theory, it should not have even been possible to overturn Roe versus Wade. It was a decision from the United States Supreme Court, and those decisions are final, or at least they're supposed to be. But if you're able to overturn that, you can literally overturn every single ruling that court has ever made. We could have this conservative Supreme Court suddenly say, you know what? Segregation was kind of fun. Let's go back to it. That's how terrifying this is. Like, you know what? Let's say that poll taxes, those are pretty cool. Let's do that again. Everything that this court has ruled on in the past can be overturned now. And that is a horrifying, terrifying thought. Here's a question from user Hey You. It says, you think it's possible that we can get a decent health system and gun control? If so, when do you think? I'm getting tired of the country and planning to move. God, I can't blame you. I cannot say I blame you at all. But I mean, when will that happen? On the gun control issue, I don't know. It would take the powerful elite of this country to be personally affected in order for something to happen. Reagan got shot and we got the Brady Bill. It sucks that that's what it took to have to get that. But that was at a time when even Republicans were like, hey, whoa, hold up. Maybe we ought to stop and think about what we're doing to the country. I don't know that we have enough Republicans left who have that kind of introspection. So on the gun control issue, I don't know. We would have to get most of the Republicans out of Congress, or the Republicans in Congress or the wealthy elite that fund the campaigns would have to suffer tremendous loss. And we don't want that at all. We don't want these people to go through what the victims of gun violence are going through. So I don't know. The health system, the second we get money out of politics, we'll get universal health care. That's the only thing holding us up. Majority of people in this country on the issue of universal health care, single-payer health care, Medicare for all, whatever the hell you want to call it, they want it when it's not tied to a political party. That's the caveat that everybody always forgets to put in there, because when you ask them about the Democrats' plan to have Medicare for all, majority of voters reject it. If you ask them if they want Medicare for all, they will say yes until you tie it to the political party. So that's a problem we got to overcome, but that's what money buys. That's what lobbyists get. That's what they do. They muddy the waters on the public, make it seem like Democrats are pushing socialism medicine, and it makes people stupid. Like, that's literally what we're dealing with. Lobbyists go out there, they convince members of Congress to vote one way, while the PR campaign on the other end is convincing voters to be dumb. So if we can't get that money out of politics, we're never going to get these things that our country desperately needs. So that is a massive problem. But you get that money out of politics, and we'll have universal health care a month later. Here's a question from Richard White, who says, how can our representatives not be held responsible for misrepresenting their oaths of office? because they're the ones that have to hold each other responsible. And that's what's so dumb about this system. It's like when the police, you know, have to investigate themselves for shooting an unarmed person in the street. And they're like, no, we determined they did nothing wrong. That's what the House does. And it doesn't matter if it's Democrats or Republicans. They're like, listen, if we hold our guy responsible, then what if I'm held responsible next? We got over 100 members of Congress that have been busted for insider trading, Democrats and Republicans alike. And none of them held each other accountable, because if they held that person accountable, then they'd be accountable. And so it's a slippery slope for them. That's why, by the way, so many politicians are worried about this Trump indictment. Because, oh, it's a slippery slope. Anybody could be prosecuted. That's what they're afraid of. Because when they say anybody could be prosecuted, they're, of course, trying to pretend like, well, Democrats, this means we could come after you. In reality, they're worried that, uh-oh, I've done some things that have been, you know, a little unethical against the rules of Congress. And if they can go after Trump, they can come after me too. So how do we hold them accountable? By showing up every 2 years and not voting for these people. By convincing these outside groups to come and spend money running ads, highlighting the problems with these politicians. That's another thing that has to happen. We got to have the money to spend to reach the voters to tell them how bad these politicians are. Here's a question from Don Stevenson, who says, living in Jim Jordan's district, the newspapers have reports of meth arrests every day. Maybe he should stop knocking the FBI and ask them to clean up the mess he ignores at home. You know, what's funny about that is we have all these Republicans who, as I mentioned earlier, they're ready to bomb Mexico because of the drugs coming in from Mexico. We just had a police union executive like a week or two ago get arrested for smuggling drugs for over a decade. That was out in California, San Jose, actually. She's just smuggling drugs. She's bringing them into the country via China and India, by the way, not Mexico. And then she's shipping them all over the country, disguised as candies and wedding gifts. So we want to get tough on drug smuggling. We can start in our own backyards. We don't have to start bombing Mexico. Matt Gaetz loves to talk about crime in blue cities, much like Jim Jordan. And both of these guys are ignoring the massive crime sprees in their own cities and districts. I mean, homelessness is a huge problem here in my deep red district. But anytime Republicans want to talk about homelessness, they only want to talk about California and New York City. They don't want to talk about it back home, even though it's actually worse than it is in those cities. They don't want to talk about the fact that here in Florida, we're having a massive rise in violent crime. They don't want to talk about the theft and the arrests and the murders. You know, again, I live in Matt Gaetz's district. I know you live in Jim Jordan's. And so you're talking about the crime there. I can only speak to the crime here. You turn on our local news every single day. There's a murder. Every day there is a murder. Every day. Every day. But it's the blue cities, right? It's the blue states that are seeing this massive crime wave. Bullcrap. And it pisses me off when they do this. And Jim Jordan is absolutely abusing his power and running roughshod over his constituents because he's focused on BS things like the weaponization of the government, which he is guilty of. He's the one weaponizing it to go after this prosecutor in New York. He's now going after colleges who are trying to put together reports on disinformation. He sent a letter to them saying, turn all your stuff over to us. And he's ignoring the fact that we've got rampant drug abuse in his county, his district. We got death. We got murder. You're not doing anything about it. But you're sitting here saying other blue cities are hell holes because of it. It's absolutely sickening. And that's what these Republicans do. And that's why we have to continue to shine a spotlight on it so that people know that, yeah, the country's got a lot of problems. And it's not just in blue cities. It's not just in red cities. But if you have a politician trying to tell you that another district is having problems, then chances are they're only doing that to distract the voters from the problems they're facing in their own districts. Listen, I appreciate all these questions. I think there's probably more than 150 left that I'm unfortunately not able to get to. But that's it for the free portion of this week's Ring of Fire. If you want the full show every week, make sure you subscribe and become a member at ROFpodcast.com.